Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. States are up against huge budget shortfalls. They're making deep cuts and increasingly under scrutiny, under the knife, health care. In Arizona's case, cutting treatment, transplants, for heart, lung, liver, bone marrow, and pancreas patients just clinging to life. To Arizona's governor and legislature, this is the best of bad choices. To critics, it's death panel by budget cut, the new American rationing. This hour on Point, state budget woes, health care on the line, and the charge of death panels in Arizona. You can join the conversation. Is this the way it's going to be? Sorry, we can't afford that treatment. Is this necessary? Is it tolerable? You can comment as well on our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. The BBC caught up last week with Arizona's Governor Jan Brewer, BBC's Channel 4 News, asking her about the decision to deny citizens organ transplants.
How many transplant patients in Arizona have to actually die before you're prepared to reverse the decision not to fund their operations?
You know, that's a real difficult, unfair question, in my opinion. You know, certainly we have made budget cuts. The bottom line is that Arizona simply doesn't have the money.
And it's only $5 million. You must be able to find it somewhere else.
I wish that, you know, I've got a $1 billion deficit facing the state of Arizona. The bottom line is we simply don't have the money.
We don't have the money, the governor of Arizona is saying right there. Joining me now from Phoenix, Arizona is Monica Corey, assistant director in the Office of Intergovernmental Relations for Arizona's Healthcare Cost Containment System, which is Arizona's Medicaid agency. Monica Corey, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And from Washington, Jocelyn Geyer is with us, co-executive director at the Georgetown University's Health Policy Institute Center for Family and Children. Jocelyn Geyer, thank you for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Monica Curry, first to you, what put Arizona in this position that it needed to take, you know, pretty extreme steps? What are you up against?
Well, we're up against one of the most serious economic downturns that our state has faced in its history. And it is something that we have been warning about since 2007, at least from a Medicaid perspective. Just to give you some backdrop, the state of Arizona has lost 300,000 jobs, which equates to about 10% of our workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Our revenue collections are down by 34% since the start of the recession. And at the same time, our Medicaid enrollment is up by over 44%. So part of what is exacerbating our fiscal crisis is the increased enrollment in the Medicaid program. And one of the reasons we have had such great enrollment is because we have a fairly generous Medicaid program. So we cover in Arizona all citizens up to 100% of the federal poverty level.
And this job loss is not unrelated to the Medicaid enrollment increase, right? I mean, people lose a job and pretty soon they're in trouble. They end up on Medicaid rolls.
That's absolutely correct. And because we cover childless adults, non-disabled adults, and parents, which is unique to the state of Arizona, there are only a handful of other states that do that, we have seen greater enrollment than perhaps in other states. So at this current time, we're covering about 1.35 million Arizonans, or 20% of the population that is on the Medicaid program.
What do you make of the charge that in response to that, you have taken the step of effectively introducing death panels? You know, you've got a problem with your heart, your liver, your lung of a certain kind. We're not going to cover it. Good luck to you. Go die.
Well, it's very simple for folks to do the finger wagging
mm-hmm.
and come up with entertaining quips that might catch the media's attention. We don't have the luxury of being entertaining. This is a very serious issue. We've taken it very seriously since 2007 when we have been trying to warn folks, including our members of Congress, that the Medicaid program, at least in the state of Arizona, is in crisis. And what we need are solutions and not folks to do finger wagging. So where we are now is in a situation where we have been basically our backs have been put against the wall, mm-hmm. in the sense that we cannot make any changes to our eligibility program.
Because those are federally mandated.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And we have been in that position since the Recovery Act. Now, the Recovery Act was different because at least there were also additional federal dollars that were coming through that act to provide states with assistance.
Temporarily, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now with the Affordable Care Act, that prohibition to make changes on eligibility continues through 2014, but without any of the federal assistance.
I don't think it's entertaining, but it's surely shocking to a lot of people when it comes to this, and you're saying you're up against the wall.
Well, it should be shocking that all states are making a number of different kinds of changes. Let me give you an example. The state of Arizona, because of its decrease in revenue collections and lost jobs and the severity of the fiscal crisis here, has had to scale back state government expenditures by $2.2 billion mm-hmm. out of a $10 billion general fund budget. So let me give you an example of what that has meant to everyday Arizonans. The Department of Health Services, which is a different department from the state
right.
Medicaid agency,
mm-hmm.
provides behavioral health services to individuals. Well, there's a state-only funded program to that component that provides behavioral health services to the seriously mentally ill. Because of this shortfall, we have had to cut back those services to 15,000 individuals who are seriously mentally ill.
15,000 out of how many who would have been eligible previously?
They're not Medicaid eligible.
Mm-hmm.
These are just state-only funded services.
Mm-hmm.
To provide an example of how this budget crisis has cut across state government and affects lives and the health of individuals on a day-to-day basis.
Monica Khoury, stand by in Phoenix, if you would, for just a moment there. I want to pull back the curtain to this bigger national picture that you're pointing at. Jocelyn Geyer in Washington, we were reading here that 39 states have cut payments to Medicaid providers, 20 have cut optional benefits in the 2010 fiscal year, and many more planning that this year. I mean, how widespread, you know, Monica Khoury says they've got a crisis in Arizona. How widespread is this trouble?
I think it's helpful to look at what is similar between Arizona and other states and then what's really unique about what Arizona's doing. As Monica said, the dynamic in Arizona is very similar to what states across the country are facing. Every state, with the exception of North Dakota, is facing a budget shortfall or has coped with one in recent years. They have been of historic proportions, massive budget deficits. I think the difference between Arizona and other states, though, is that Arizona has gone for some cuts that are really over the line that we haven't seen other states making and that really jeopardize the health of their citizens and the integrity of their healthcare system. So while it is true that all states are in a tough spot, there's a range of responses states have had to that, and other states are looking at more balanced approaches that include finding new sources of revenue as well as tightening their belts when it comes to Medicaid and other spending programs.
Arizona doesn't like the death panel label. That's understandable, but it was pulled out pretty quickly when health reform was on the table not that many months ago. I mean, are these lives on the line here? Is it a life and death decision that's being made when these particular treatments are withheld, not paid for?
It is potentially a life and death situation, and there have been numerous compelling stories coming out of Arizona. You know, a 27-year-old young woman who has been fighting cystic fibrosis, doing pretty well, and at this point now needs a lung transplant and simply has no options. A father of four children who's in need of a liver transplant. And the real irony here is that there's a huge human toll associated with this cut, but there's very little money to be saved from it. Monica will have the numbers mm-hmm. up to the latest, but I think it's about $1.4 million a year, and that's out of an $8 billion Medicaid budget. So it's a cut that has very serious life-threatening consequences for a tiny group of people, but it really doesn't address the larger situation with Medicaid spending. And here it's maybe helpful to just talk a little bit about what drives Medicaid spending. It isn't this tiny number of people who really need organ transplants. It's primarily what's happening with long-term care. It's primarily what's happening with larger trends in the healthcare industry.
Monica, yes, please. I wanted to ask you, earlier this year, Arizona eliminated the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, affecting, I don't know, 40, 50,000 children of working class people there. And then that was reversed because of concern that it might run afoul of federal regulations. Do you see a chance that this will be pulled back? I mean, is it too excruciating to have this kind of, you know, criticism come down on the state? Do you think the governor, the legislature may turn around and say, no, we've got to stop that. We've got to reinstate this? Or is it just impossible, Monica?
Well, we don't have a $1 million problem in Arizona. We have a $1 billion problem in Arizona.
And yeah, but that's not around these transplants or these treatments.
It doesn't matter, because if we don't resolve the $1 billion problem, there won't be eligible candidates to transplant in the first place. We may not even have a Medicaid program in Arizona. The options that are being discussed are eliminate the program altogether, mm-hmm. or try to gain a federal waiver to eliminate about 300,000 of our non-disabled adults from the program. Most of those are the ones who are transplant-eligible candidates, and those are folks that other states aren't covering. So I don't know what happens in other states that don't even cover childless adults.
And when you say eliminate Medicaid, you're talking about like opting out of it, just stepping out of the program.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Texas has talked about that. Governor Rick Perry there has talked about that.
Other states have talked about it because it is an option that's on the table, and when states are faced with the situations that they're faced with, it has to at least come up in the conversation. I appreciate that Jocelyn wants us to look at other options, but to be frank, we have looked at every option. We have increased all cost sharing wherever possible throughout the entire program. So
Monica Corey, please stand by in Phoenix. We're so glad to have you with us here today. And Jocelyn Geyer in Washington, D.C. Sorry, but we've got a short break here, Monica. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about state budget woes, very big ones, health care denial, and the charge of death panel in Arizona. We're hearing Arizona says, what are we supposed to do with these costs? Monica Corey joins us from Phoenix, Arizona. She's right in the middle of Arizona's Medicaid agency there. Jocelyn Geyer is with us from the Georgetown University Health Policy Institute's Center for Family and Children in Washington. And you can join us, 800-423-TALK. We're going to hear just a moment from one Arizonan struggling with this. Tom in Owosso, Michigan. Tom, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Mr. Ashbrook. Just wanted to say that there are a lot of us on the Democratic side, on the far left, too, that are very happy to have seen that the Republicans come up with the first death panel, so to speak. It really is it's amazing. They were jumping all over that with no evidence at all, and now they get to run their first death panel.
But they would not call it that. They're not happy with it. You can hear that from Monica. She's not happy with it, Tom.
Oh, it doesn't matter whether they're happy with it or not. They're not ready to fund in any other way, as are so many other Republican administrations in states.
Tom, I appreciate your call. Tom, let me get one more from Nashville, Tennessee. Clyde, you're on the air. Clyde?
Yes. I kind of like what that last commentator or the last
our caller, Tom,
was talking about. But to carry it one step further, he's wanting to make it a Republican problem. I would say it's more people who have and people who have not, not necessarily rich against poor, but insurance and non-insurance. I can remember back when the Tea Party was raising so much sand, the big complaint was, we don't want to pay for it. But I didn't see anybody, obviously, and being in Nashville, I had opportunity to see them walking in and out of mm-hmm. Gaylord and Opryland Hotel, and they were all driving nice cars. They were all paying a lot of money to be there, and I didn't see anybody offering up their own benefits or ready to cash in their own benefits to help the country. I just get the impression that people that have insurance aren't going to worry about it and don't want to pay more taxes, and the rest of us will have to go to someplace like Canada.
Glad, I appreciate your call as well. One more here. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Tom, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that the increases in medical costs in this country in the last 20 years are due to more expensive technological procedures that
right.
everybody is getting.
Right.
My question is, at what point does the American public say, well, we just can't, it's not sustainable. We can't all get heart transplants. We can't all get lung transplants. At 80 years old, we can't all get new hip replacements so we can play tennis. We got to rein in our appetite for medical treatment. That's the bottom line, in my opinion.
So, yeah, at what point can we simply not afford it? I'll put that to Monica Corey and Jennifer Geyer, Jocelyn Geyer, excuse me. But if I may, Steve, let's take it, you know, right to somebody whose family is in the middle of this first. I want to go to Kim Vega in joining us from Peoria, Arizona. She's the sister of Douglas Gravagna, who a couple of years back was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy. This summer, he qualified for a heart transplant. He's 45 years old, has the heart of someone who's 95, and essentially doctors say he'll die without a new heart. In October, he learned that Arizona would not fund his transplant. Kim Vega, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. You hear our caller there from Cambridge, Massachusetts, saying at some point the country, maybe Arizona, simply can't afford all this treatment. What do you say, Kim?
You know, my position on that is that even though I understand, first of all, it's government that put our state in the position that it is. That's number one.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what? They talk about, you know, dollars and cents. Okay, they're talking about their $825 million deficit and now possibly facing a $1 billion deficit.
Yep.
All right. Well, you know, I think it's the hands of government, okay, control, you know, that's operating the state, that have put this state in the position that it is in handling their funds. And first and foremost, okay, I don't think that, I mean, I agree that if you have to make cuts or you have to make adjustments in so many other needed areas, do what you have to do, okay? I can understand that. I'm not unreasonable there. But you are tolling now with human life. And who has the right to dictate who lives or dies?
When your brother got the word last summer that he was green-lighted for a transplant, did you think that he might get it, that he might have a chance to live on? Did it look like that's
actually,
the...
Actually, yes, most definitely. All right, because actually when Access... First of all, Douglas was employed by a private sector, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When the economy shifted, like so many other people, he lost his job. With that went the health, you know, private health insurance,
right.
Okay? Now, what happened in the interim is that he had fallen, okay, got quite ill, and was in need to apply for Access. He was
yep.
granted Access. Access at the time turned around and stated that, you know what, his care should be taken care of. So we were under the impression that, you know, well, you know, at least he has insurance, he will be taken care of. Come October 7th is the day we received the letter stating that, you know what, we regret to inform you that, you know what, his transplant will not be covered.
And this is from the state of Arizona or what
well,
kind?
Well, you know, state of Arizona, I mean, you're talking about Access as a whole.
Access is the program that would have used Medicaid to cover the transplant for him
well,
before?
Well, they have independent plans,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Right.
So, like, his was Mercy Care, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's Arizona APIPA. There's different plans underneath the Access umbrella.
Right. But it's Medicaid standing behind those, and the decision was made to take these off the list of things that could be paid for.
Most definitely.
What's Doug think about it, your brother?
What does he think about it?
Yeah.
His plea is, don't let me die.
Do you think Arizona can afford it? I mean, Arizona is in a big budget hole.
Can we afford it? No, we cannot afford it. Okay, a cost for a transplant is roughly $250,000 or more.
So what should happen here? What do you make of what's happened to your family, to your brother?
What happened? How do you define that, Tom? What do you mean what happened? What happened is that, you know what, someone that is precious to us, and not only Douglas, okay, this is not only about Douglas. Yes, it's touching us personally,
mm-hmm.
but there are other people affected by this, okay? Somebody's loved one that's being affected by this. These are young people that have a future, that options are available, that they could have a second chance at life. This could be a win-win situation for these people.
And I know that you're trying to raise the money to get it done. There's a link at our website to the National Transplant Assistance Fund. It's a lot of money that's needed, but if people want to go there, onpointradio.org, and help directly, there is that option. But it's not coming from...
I welcome that, okay, but, you know,
yeah.
you can't stand by because time is of the essence. And for every day that, you know what, a decision has not been unturned or a decision has not been made in some fashion to help these people, okay, a life will be lost. That's the bottom line.
Kim, Monica, Jocelyn, please stand by. Naomi is calling from Dubuque, Iowa. Naomi, you're on the air. What do you think of all this?
Hi, Tom. I just, you know, kind of to touch back to one of your previous callers about the haves and the have-nots. And, you know, it's easy when... those of us with jobs and health care, you know, to make these tough decisions. And I understand that this your guest that's from Arizona, you know, is just doing her job and, you know, is lucky to have a job and probably has health care. And I understand that, but it's, you know, when you're without that, you know, any one of us, especially in this economy, it can happen to her. It could happen to any one of us that you lose your job and then you're stuck. And, you know, and there needs to be a social you know, there needs to be some sense of community in taking care of people who need help. And I understand that there's a budget cut and there are tough decisions to be made, but for such a small, and she keeps emphasizing this $1 billion deficit, which is, you know, is huge, but for such a small percentage of that deficit to be, you know, for this to be making such a small difference in that huge deficit, and then when you compare it to the human suffering.
So do you have a question for Monica Corey in Phoenix, Naomi?
Well, I just am curious, you know, and not to put her on the spot, but isn't that hard? I mean, for your own conscience and your own, I understand that you're just doing your job, but isn't that kind of hard to live with, knowing that you're making those you're making decisions like, or supporting decisions like that?
Monica in Phoenix, what do you say?
I so appreciate the caller's concern and passion, and I share that. That's why I work in the Medicaid business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I work in Medicaid because I believe in the core value of the program, which is to care for our nation's most vulnerable citizens. And for most of the nation, that is the aged, the blind, the disabled, pregnant women and children.
And a whole lot of long-term elders whose families have run out of money.
Correct. And it just so happens that in Arizona, we cover a whole lot of other people that most states don't cover at all. So in a lot of these cases, folks that are on the transplant list wouldn't be on any list, at least not on the Medicaid program in most every other state. And so for us, we're in the middle of trying to preserve a Medicaid program, because if we don't get out of this year, we won't have a Medicaid program.
So, but
and that's why it's $1 billion. And one of your callers made another important point, which is that no one wants to pay for it. Let me give you an example. Folks don't want their taxes to be raised. And in the state of Arizona, at least, the transplant physician community, they work out of hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Our hospital community in Arizona has flatly rejected a provider tax. So there isn't other revenue to be had. If we can't get a provider tax, if folks don't want their taxes to be raised, this isn't, Medicaid doesn't print money. So I know that this is a horrible discussion to even be having.
Yeah.
When we looked at all of our optional benefits, we don't cover any frivolous benefits.
You know,
we review them all very carefully, and every single one plays an important part. The only other optional benefits that are left to be cut are things like pharmaceuticals and home and community-based services, which would just completely devastate the entire program for all 1.35 members.
I'm going to take this to Jocelyn and to Kim, whose brother is right on the line here. But let me put it to you, Monica, just not to lose Naomi's question from Dubuque, because she's looking at the fundamental sense of community that we have or we don't. And you're right there at the implementation point of cutting this off. You know, and she's asking you personally, how does that feel? I mean, the rest of us can sort of, you know, close our eyes and walk away. But how does it feel to be right there? We heard the governor squirming when the BBC put that to her. But, I mean, you're there having to implement this. I don't know. Do you feel guilty on Arizonans' behalf, on the whole country's behalf? How does it feel? Kim's brother's dying.
It is a very difficult situation, and it is a place where nobody should want to be. And what we are fighting to do is to preserve a Medicaid program for the state of Arizona.
Jocelyn, what do you say?
I would hate your listeners to end up feeling like Arizona was truly unique in covering who it does. There really are other states in the same situation. There's seven other states that cover childless adults the way that Arizona does.
Mm-hmm.
There are about 20 more that provide them with some health care benefits. And again, they've all found more balanced better, compassionate ways to make their health care cuts. I think the other really important piece of this picture, which hasn't emerged yet, is the efforts that the federal government has made to support states in sustaining the vital role of Medicaid during the economic downturn. Over the last couple of years, Arizona has gotten an additional $2 billion
and a lot of other
from the
states,
federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Other states as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal government has acknowledged that it is a burden. It is hard during a downturn when lots of people temporarily have to turn to Medicaid to get them through until the next job.
But that support's going
really
away. That big federal money is going away.
It would be going. It's available for another 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really designed to get states through the worst part of the downturn.
And that's where Arizona's situation truly is unique, because our downturn is going to lag for a longer period of time than other states because we were a heavy real estate and construction-centered economy. So we were a state that was at 3.5% unemployment before the recession hit, and now we're up just about at 10% unemployment. And we're going to stay at those elevated levels for some time. I just have to come back to the fact that, unfortunately, we have made all kinds of other cuts and reductions. We have made $874 million worth of reductions to the Medicaid program already. We have cut health plan payments. We've cut provider rates. We've frozen institutional payments. We've cut other optional benefits. We have increased cost sharing. We have increased program integrity efforts to make sure that there is the least amount of fraud and abuse. And all
yep.
at the same time, we have managed to maintain the lowest or among the lowest per member per year costs among Medicaid programs in the country. And we have 90% of our elderly living in the home and community. So
which is great. But for all that, I mean, you still come to the point where Kim's brother's life is on the line. And we in a bigger sense are saying, sorry, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Dennis, you're on the air, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, and comment is, what would Jesus do? You know, what would Jesus have us do? When Jesus walked the face of this earth, he healed the sick, he cured the lame, he caused the blind to see, the deaf to hear, he rose the dead from the grave. And nowhere in my Bible did he send them a bill. He didn't even check their insurance card. He just did it. And he teaches us that you cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve God and money.
Well,
I think our whole focus is on money and cost, and that's not what we're here for. That's not what Jesus taught us. So I ask you, what would Jesus have us do?
Dennis, we've got it. And it may not be everybody's path, but it's Christmas week. I don't know. Kim, what do you say there?
I don't know what Jesus would do, but you know what? I've got to have faith, okay, that something positive will come out of this, not only for my brother, but for other people that have been put in this situation, for other families that are in this situation. This is a tragedy, okay? And to some degree, I feel that, you know, it's criminal. I really do. I feel it's immoral. I don't think that any body of government should be put in the position to dictate who lives or dies.
But Monica's saying, look, we've cut all over the place. What do you want us to cut? Schools?
I don't think that they have, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. I
mm-hmm.
don't think that they have, okay? I mean, they have gotten, I was at a press conference, okay, where the university medical center and the collective hospitals, you know, in Phoenix, through the surrounding states, have come up with a plan, okay, that, you know, would not cost the taxpayer, and to show them that, you know, how effective this would be if they were to reinstate this. It was told to us that, you know what, no one's willing to listen. No one's willing to listen to what they have to say. People have been throwing out left and right potential, you know, steps for a path of recovery for the state of Arizona. And the governor has just taken a position. She's turned a deaf ear.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about state budget woes, health care denial, and the situation in Arizona where people who need transplants are not going to get them. Arizona's up against a huge budget deficit, and they've said we've got to draw the line somewhere. They're drawing it. Critics are calling it death panels. They say, what are we supposed to do? Monica Corey's with us, Assistant Director, Office of Intergovernmental Relations in the Arizona Health Care Cost Containment System. That's Arizona's Medicaid agency. Jocelyn Geyer is here from Washington at the Georgetown University Health Policy Institute Center for Family and Children. And Kim Vega's with us from Arizona, Peoria, Arizona, sister of Douglas Gravagna, who needs a heart transplant. He was on the list to get one. He's off now that it's been cut from the list of things that are covered. They're looking for support for him and for others. You can see, find a link at our website to do that. We've got all kinds of comments here online, Monica, Jocelyn, Kim. Gaff says, this is the Republican answer to health care. Cut taxes, and if you're not rich enough to afford the, that operation, too bad. Lynn writes, my brother's on a transplant list. That means, should he survive, his health will improve dramatically, and he can go back to work and be a productive member of society again. Good health care is an economic issue as much as it is a humane issue, she writes. Here's Paula. The very wealthy in this country are not sharing the pain of this economic downturn. If taxes on multimillionaires were raised, this could begin to help preserve some of the programs being cut. And then there's this. Monica, I'll put this to you. Jeff writes, Arizona's quote-unquote low-tax nirvana has been siphoning people from the Midwest and weakening our economies for decades. Now that life has proven not to be so cheap, Arizona, raise your taxes. You created your own mess. You fix it, writes Jeff. What do you say to that, Monica?
Well, the voters have their own minds. I don't speak for the voters or the taxpayers of the state of this state or of any other state. And it comes down again to the issues that have been raised that, unfortunately, all of this does come at a cost. If folks are not willing to, and we simply have not heard of any campaign within the state of Arizona to raise taxes to cover the access program. Recently, the voters of the state of Arizona voted to increase their taxes by $1 billion through an increase in the state sales tax mm-hmm. that the governor led as a proposal, and it took her 2 years to get that to the ballot. We have not had the same kind of reaction across the state to raise taxes again by another $1 billion to cover the access program. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, but my only point in being here today mm-hmm. is to explain that without that kind of an effort led by the voters, then there simply aren't any other options left for the state but to either opt out of the Medicaid program or to find another $1 billion to cut from. And if we have to cut another $1 billion, we're looking at really decimating not only the Medicaid program, but all kinds of other state-funded programs.
Jocelyn, speak to this systematically. I mean, we've just been through a huge debate in this country on healthcare reform, and all kinds of charges about death panels were thrown around then. But here, we're actually seeing people's lives on the line. I mean, if you step back, is there a system change that would get Arizona and many other states out of this fix, or are we just up against it? We've got fancier, more health care than we can afford.
I don't think the Arizona situation is inevitable. In fact, I really think it could be avoided. And one of the most troubling things about it is they've thrown out a medical basis for their decision making and entirely based it on the state fiscal situation, which I think Monica's last points really highlight. There are more options out there. It's a matter of political will. It's not that Arizona simply has no other choices.
Well, that's not what they said. They said these operations have such low, success rates that we can't justify them.
Yeah, and I think that's actually one of the most disturbing things is it seems to have been made very quickly as a decision, and all of the medical research they've been citing has now been, much of it's been called into question. The author of one of the major studies they cited said he was slightly horrified they had used it. It was a 15-year-old study. He compared it to making a decision about whether or not to cover HIV drugs based on looking at drugs effectiveness 15 or 20 years ago. So I think in some respects it's kind of the worst worst combination of pretending to look a little bit at some of the medical research, which really is far more controversial than they have allowed, and really making a budget-based decision that I think we're starting to see, even among some of the political leaders in the state, some regret about. I know that the Republican chair of the House Appropriations Committee has said now, in light of the questions about the medical research, he may need to look at that again.
Well, I don't appreciate that you're suggesting we pretended to look at literature. That's not helpful to the situation. The bottom line is, let me give you an example. In the ACCESS-specific data, and ACCESS is how we pronounce the acronym for the mm-hmm. state's Medicaid program, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. we had 13 out of 14 individuals in the unrelated bone marrow transplants die within 6 months. And though we have no issue with the national data, why our data for a 7% success rate in that area is what it is something you'd have to ask the physician community. But nobody has been able to refute that data or explain it in any other way.
But I must say, a lot of people have come forward with national data to refute it. I mean, the president of the American Society of Transplant Surgeons, Michael Abacasis, saying that Arizona used data that was outdated or made no sense, misinterpreted, misrepresented what experts said, quoting him there.
No. Well, Tom, it doesn't refute our actual health care outcomes for ACCESS members. We're not refuting their national data. We understand that there's a 42% success rate for unrelated bone marrow transplants at the national level. For the state of Arizona's Medicaid program, it happens to be a 7% success rate. So nobody has been able to refute that 7% success rate.
Yeah, but we've got to be careful here about how we characterize that. That's a relatively small number, and people have certainly come forward, as you know, of course, Monica, nationally, and said this is not an accurate representation nationally of what rates are. Let me get a call from Niagara Falls here, if I may. New York, Mark, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. This is a tragedy, and it's regrettable, but I think it's forgivable. It's the medical community calls it triage. I think it's you save as many people with what you have as you can. And I don't think 42% at destination-wide averages compares favorably with, say, vaccinations or prenatal care. Or you've got to, like, make tough decisions.
What if it was you then, Mark, and there was a 42% chance? Are you willing to say, I'm out of here, you know, put me in the coffin?
Well, I wouldn't have to say so, would I? They would tell me you're out of here.
But I mean, would you think that would be reasonable?
No, I wouldn't like it. I feel bad. I feel very bad. But hey, that's the way it is. There's not a magic wand or an infinite pot of money, and you use what you have to the best advantage.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, I appreciate your call. Kim Vega, are you looking for a magic wand for an infinite amount of money?
I don't believe that's being realistic here, looking for a magic wand, okay? My position with the governor is that, you know what, if there are cuts to be made, I'm sure there are other avenues that can be researched, all right? But you do not take away a human being's life. And what I'm more concerned about is that if Arizona gets away with this, they will be setting a precedent for other states in the union at some point in time to reference that, you know, if Arizona can do this, why can't we? And then what are we looking at? What is humanity looking at?
Well, this was debated last summer around the same time your brother Douglas was thinking he might get a transplant. I mean, there was a great hue and cry over this interpretation that there were death panels, in the healthcare reform. I'm not sure I hear those same people making a hue and cry now, Kim.
No, I don't. I don't. And I'd like to propose to them, you know, the true tragedy of all this is that if it was affecting any one of their family members, so to speak, and they found themselves having to deal with this unfounded tragedy, okay, they would want for nothing. They would want for nothing, and it would not be something that they would have to worry about. But let me tell you something.
Of course, a lot of people do have to worry about it these days.
Yes,
50 million don't have insurance at the moment.
Most definitely. And you know what? And another thing I'd like to also put out there is that, you know what, it is the working class people of this state that make this state what it is. And these people these four families that are in need of an organ transplant were all working, productive people that felt tragedy to something they had no control over. This is not about choice. And to hear the governor reference that, you know what, that, you know, when she's questioned how many more people have to die, that it's an unfair question. What is so unfair about it, Tom? What's unfair about that question, answering the question, how many more people will have to die before, you know what, government takes a position to turn around and say that, you know what we're doing is inhumane?
Well, it's sure an uncomfortable question. Betty in Marshalltown, Iowa, you're on the air, Betty. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to respond to the caller who talked about how you make decisions in triage, and I would say that what we're talking about this morning is a completely different situation than a triage situation. We're talking about chronic illness and not,
right.
not a disaster or an emergency, and I think when he talked about you do what you can with the resources available, I think what we're all ignoring and nobody wants to talk about is that we have resources in this country. We just have to raise the taxes. There are people who can afford to pay more taxes to cover this kind of situation, and I think we're all too afraid to talk about that.
Betty, I appreciate your call. Jeffrey, Framingham, Massachusetts. Jeffrey, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom, and hi, listeners. What I think is that the major problem with the healthcare industry as a whole is the insurance company's intervention in it. Insurance does not do healthcare, does not cure people. If we were to get rid of the insurance companies and have a national healthcare system, much of this would be totally changed. I'm over 65. Without Medicare, I would be dead. That's it. I've had several operations that saved my life. But because of my age and because of Medicare, which is similar to national health,
yep.
I'm alive. I wish everybody could have that. The people who are talking about the survival rates, I would ask them, Douglas was approved for a transplant.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk about that so many people wouldn't survive or he wouldn't survive. He was already attributed, had enough health to be able to survive.
Right, to make the list. Jeffrey, we've got it. Jocelyn, what about that? I mean, Jeffrey says, you know, national health care system, this wouldn't be a problem. Is that true? Are these procedures covered, let's say, in Canada or the UK? No problem, off you go, we'll do it?
Not only are they covered in those places, but they're covered by most private insurers, and they're covered by most other states' Medicaid programs. So I actually don't think this set of procedures is the one that's kind of pushing the envelope. We do see most states cover these, and it's worth pointing out, as Monica said, this is optional. Arizona doesn't have to do this. Other states don't have to do this, but they've made the choice to do so, to find the resources to support people. And I think that's part of why it feels like it's important that listeners understand that Arizona is making a choice here. There's other possibilities, and other states have found ways to continue it, even those that are in similarly tough situations. I don't think the legislators in Nevada or California think they have a very easy budget situation either. They have similarly high unemployment rates, similar problems with real estate prices declining. And so I think it's important to broaden the conversation and to look at the other kinds of options out there, which do need to, I think a number of the callers have raised, do need to include revenue options. As Monica said earlier, Arizona doesn't have any kind of contribution from its hospitals or tax on its hospitals. 34 states have that. That is a possibility that could solve this situation. It's a question of political will.
Monica, is there something about Arizona that makes it not, you know, not want? I realize there's a real problem on the fiscal side, a real problem, but things could be done on the fiscal side too. I mean, do Arizona just not want to pay for those that can't afford it? Is there something in your sociology there that makes people less willing to step up and take care of Kim's brother?
I think most folks don't understand the Medicaid program and don't quite know how it works. I certainly would not dare to express that I know the minds of the state voters, so I wouldn't really be able to answer that.
Well, it's your state. You live there. I mean, I don't know. Is it like they don't want to pay for immigrant health care or...
All I know for a fact is that Arizonans are hurting,
yep.
and Arizona families
yep.
are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very low average base salary in the state of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of folks who are unemployed currently that previously weren't in sectors of the economy that just aren't going to come back, and they can't find jobs in other areas. And we have folks who are trying to make it work with two and three jobs and barely making ends meet, and they just agreed to raise their taxes by $1 billion. I don't know whether they're willing to raise it another billion or not, but that is a question that should be that is what's being discussed here, because we have not heard that outcry from anybody within the state, not the hospitals, not the voters.
Is this going to get worse, Monica, before it gets better? Might you have to cut off other procedures, you know, more widely needed procedures if the red ink grows more dramatically?
We've said a long time that this is going to get worse before it gets better, and unfortunately, what we're not even facing cutting off other optional benefits, because at this point, the only other optional benefits left to cut where there's any significant dollar amount is pharmaceuticals, drug coverage, and home and community-based services. If we cut those two, we might as well just terminate the program, because it would decimate the program entirely. And you could get a transplant, but you wouldn't be able to get the drugs to sustain your new organ.
And it's not just Arizona. California, Dennis, they're pulling teeth there because the Medicaid doesn't pay for root canals there now. Kim, how long does your brother Doug have?
Well, we don't know, okay? At this point in time, his injection fraction is a little under 6%, which means that, you know what, for every day, you know, it depletes itself, okay? The heart, okay? Right now, he's comparable to that of like a 95-year-old man, which would mean, you know, to give you a visual, that his ambulatoriness, I mean, he can only go so far, he can only talk so much.
Is he preparing for death in his own mind, or still hoping for a miracle here?
I believe he's hoping for a miracle because, you know what, he wants his life back. But at the same token, I do believe that he's facing his own mortality.
Can we pray for a miracle or something even better, something even more lasting here for your brother Douglas? And I appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Jocelyn Geyer at Georgetown University in Washington. Jocelyn, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
And Monica Curry, thank you for engaging with this. We really appreciate that, Monica, and we wish you good luck there in Arizona.
Thank you.
Monica Curry in Phoenix, Arizona. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.